I'm pleased to welcome back to Fremantle Shipping News the member for Fremantle in the Federal Parliament, Josh Wilson. Welcome, Josh.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
I've been talking to candidates for declared candidates for the seat of Fremantle. Some of them you will know are old, some are new to the political fight here in Fremantle. You, of course, have been around a while. You had a bit of an interruption when citizenship issues came along and have affected other people and other parties since. But I've asked others, why are you running? I take it that you're happy to continue to be running in the seat. Are you as committed as you ever were?
I am. I mean, I'm a person who has been committed to public service through community representation for some time, and I know the value of it. I take the responsibility of doing that work very seriously. When you're trusted with that role, you should pour every bit of yourself into it, and that's the approach that I've always taken. And of course, you know, you're quite rightly judged at intervals along the way, and I say that in all my dealings with people who contact me about whatever issue, I say, you know, you've got to look at me, who I am, my character, my values, my work ethic, my record, and reach your own judgment. And I'm happy to be assessed on all of those things. I'd love to keep working in this role. It's the most meaningful thing I've ever undertaken. I'm crystal clear about the potential that you have and the responsibility that you have in doing this work to help people individually, you know, in families, in small businesses, in larger organisations, but also to make a contribution to good governance at the national level.
And then that really leads into the next question. There's all of that commitment about, in a sense, making a better Australian society. But then there's this moment when people in a party get elected to government. Are you ready for that moment? Are you ready to govern?
I think we are. I don't think there's any doubt about that, whether it's Anthony Albanese as the leader or all of the many people that make up the shadow cabinet. I mean, it is a very seasoned crew with a great mix of people like Anthony who've been involved in public service and leadership and policy formation for close to three decades, and then other people who have come in the last 10 years or so, like our shadow treasurer Jim Chalmers and Claire O'Neill, who's doing great work in aged care, my boss effectively, the shadow minister for the environment, Terry Butler. I mean, I could go on and on and on. I think we've worked very hard. We had a good look at ourselves after 2019, which was a disappointing result. I think we've been very focused though on being a constructive and rigorous opposition, but principally looking at what Australia really needs if we're to go forward as a fairer, more inclusive and socially responsible nation.
We perhaps can come back in a moment or two to some of those big issues that are national and impinge on Fremantle as well. But are there local issues in Fremantle that you think are relevant to this election?
Well, the electorate of Fremantle is bigger and more diverse than a lot of people realise, but there are challenges. So you've got challenges in the northwest part of the seat, in sort of inner Fremantle, which are, I would say, challenges of renewal and revitalisation. You've got challenges on the sort of the east and the southeast of the electorate, which are more about growth. I mean, Fremantle actually includes, in the city of Coburn, one of the fastest growing local governments in Australia. And what comes with that is a need for matching community services and community resources. I'm very conscious that we have very poor deal when it comes to NBN infrastructure. I think that's one of the signal failures of the present government. It is the critical infrastructure of the 21st century, and yet they decided that it was a good idea to use 20th century or even 19th century telephone copper wire as the basis for that network. And Western Australia got half again as much of that copper wire as any other comparable state jurisdiction, and that's holding back households. Through COVID, we've seen that, whether it's telehealth or tele-education, certainly holding back businesses. So I think that's an example of a national level issue that is of particular importance in a place like Fremantle. But I'm also conscious of the potential in this electorate to take advantage of some of the shifts in areas like renewable energy, energy efficiency, robotics, sophisticated manufacturing and shipbuilding, the arts and creative industry, which has been a strength of Fremantle's for a long time. It ought to be one of the really strong themes of our emergence from the pandemic, and yet it was neglected during the pandemic, and I think is too often regarded as a sort of a pastime or a hobby or something, when in reality, the creative industries, one of the biggest employers and one of the biggest generators of value in the nation. And of course, it's intimately tied to tourism, which we'd like to see come back. I mean, tourism in recent times has been one of the five biggest generators of export income for Australia. And along with international education, the only two sort of service sectors in that top five. And we do want, as we emerge from the pandemic, for that to kind of come back strongly.
When you go more directly to the national issues, what are the big issues for Labor going into this election? And I preface the question really by observing that in any political campaign, there's still a couple of weeks to run. Almost daily there's a new topic to be discussed that appears on the evening news or ABC 7:30 or whatever, and that swallows up the discussion for a day or two. But when you come back to the key issues, what are they going to be, do you think?
Well, I think at the very highest level, people deserve to expect government that is honest and competent and has integrity. And there have been a lot of examples over the last few years where that has been missing. And so I think fundamentally, people of Fremantle and the community in Australia across the board, they deserve a government that can deliver those things. And certainly, one thing I reckon people will hold on to as they go to the ballot box this time around is the idea that if you don't take account of incompetence and dishonesty, then one thing you can be sure of is dishonesty and incompetence will continue. And I don't think we need any more of that. So that's, I would say, thematically, that's at the highest level. But coming down from there, I mean, we need an economy that works for people. We've got a situation at the moment where real wages are falling. Wages themselves have been stagnant for 10 years. There's now a big separation between what people are getting paid and what things cost. And that means essentially people's financial well-being is going backwards because we've got a government that essentially said that holding wages down was a design feature of their approach. And that has to change. We've also always been clear in saying that Labor's ethos is about strengthening the things we share. And those are our public health and education systems, community infrastructure, like things like public transport, and our environment. And so we make no apology for saying that we're going to pick up both ends of the life spectrum with respect to the what they call the care economy, childcare on the one hand, aged care on the other. We just know that there is awful mismanagement and neglect occurring. We're going to take real action on climate change. We're going to shift our productive focus into emerging areas like renewable energy.
Let's just talk about climate change. One of the questions I did want to ask about, given a bit more of a highlight in an immediate sense by one of your colleagues in Canberra, but not in your party, Matt Canavan, suggesting it was all over Redgrave and no one was worrying about net zero anymore. What do you think about all of that? How important is climate change control, and what will Labor do about it?
Well, it's hugely important, and we've known that for some time, and it is time to get past what I think is silly, purposeless conflict. And that's where we would like to be. When we tried to achieve that when we were in government last time, we think that there's really strong community and industry appetite now to get an approach that's settled, as many other countries in the world have. And if we don't, we know that the economic costs and the social costs will be extraordinary, the health costs will be extraordinary, and the environmental impacts will be horrible. And we have to do better. Every part of the community wants to do better. The government has just found itself stuck in this sort of internal war with a few members being interested in a bit of a shift, but probably the weight of numbers inside the government staying in the sort of the head in the sand climate denialist burn coal forever and ever amen type of camp, and that's just deeply harmful to Australia. So you know, we've been clear, we will legislate net zero by 2050, as opposed to the Matt Canavans and others of the world who say that is no longer necessary. And we've got a midterm target which we've put out there of 43% reduction, when the government is sticking at 26% and won't even acknowledge that at Glasgow it made a commitment to come back to the next conference of the parties with an improved target. And we know we've charted out with the, you know, the most comprehensive, costed and modelled policy document that's ever been produced in Australia. We've set out exactly how that will be achieved. And what we really know that's shifted between probably 10 years ago and now is the idea that, you know, acting on climate change is not something that comes at a cost to our economic well-being. It is essential to our economic well-being. If we do not act on climate change, power costs will increase, health impacts and their costs will increase, coastal impacts, the impacts of serious and catastrophic natural disasters will increase, and we just cannot keep drifting down that path.
You mentioned questions of governments having integrity. There's been a fairly constant debate for some time, indeed a promise by the current government previously to establish an integrity commission, a federal integrity commission. It hasn't happened yet. Exactly where does Labor stand on that? Because at times, or perhaps most of the time, the Prime Minister seems to suggest that it's Labor's fault that there isn't one.
Yes, well, the Prime Minister predictably and frequently says that everything is someone else's fault. I mean, it's passing strange when the government of the day, having made a promise to introduce something, can't even get legislation into the parliament, and that's the case. I mean, all this stuff about how it's because Labor won't support it is just patent rubbish. But look, you know the importance of effective integrity frameworks. You'd have some considerable insight into those. I just don't think there's any question we've got those things at the state level. They've been quite useful in identifying and holding to account serious flaws which have involved the waste of public monies, conflict of interests, self-enrichment, all the things that are unacceptable in themselves but also are corrosive because they rightly cause people to lose faith in government. And we've got to have something at the federal level that has the same effect, so that we don't have rorts and scandals that go without any accountability because it just makes it more likely that that will continue to happen, and it becomes a vicious cycle as far as faith in and participation in our system and its good function. So we've been committed to it. We will introduce one. Anthony has made it clear that will, if there's a Labor government that gets elected, that will be in the Parliament before the end of the calendar year.
The other issue which I'd like to raise, and we're getting close to the end of this chat, is the whole question of political financing and reform of it. There's been a lot of discussion that perhaps isn't to many electors as they're going to vote uppermost in their minds, but Clive Palmer is spending, he says, more than $70 million supporting the UAP in this election. We don't have real-time disclosure. There aren't caps on expenditure. Where does the Labor Party stand on this issue?
Well, Labor has long been committed to reforms that make the influence of money in politics controlled and decreased and more transparent, and the parties and any people involved in the kind of political field accountable for those things. When we were last in government, just as an example, you know, we brought the threshold for disclosure down to $1,000. Of course, as soon as the coalition was elected, they pushed it back up to $14,000. That means that you could, as I understand it, you could donate $14,000 separately to each of the state and territory branches of a given political party.
And each member of the household.
Well, without that being disclosed. You know, so you could actually contribute a significant amount of money. So, I mean, we are committed to reducing that again. I personally don't see any reason why we shouldn't have real-time disclosure, considering the technological capacity we have. And I'm personally someone who, you know, thinks we should keep looking at how we can make our system fairer and less subject to influence of parts of the world that already have significant power. I mean, you know, that as a matter of principle, there shouldn't be the ability of people that have power, financial power, other kinds of power, as it is, to have a disproportionate effect on our political system than ordinary citizens. And we have a hybrid system of funding in our country. There's some public funding and there's some private funding. I think the more you move away from private funding, and certainly you control private funding, seek to have it be a relatively minimal part of the picture with as much transparency as possible, that's the kind of direction you should go. That's the direction we've gone in the past, and certainly we made it quite clear that some of those things that we've done around disclosure thresholds, we will implement again.
Josh, thanks for taking time out to talk to the Shipping News today. I know you've accepted the invitation to come to the Freo Candidates debate at Notre Dame on the 10th of May. And hopefully a lot of the electors and Fremantle will be there to hear you and the other candidates, perhaps as many as 10 of you. So we'll see you then.
Yes, look forward to it.
Thanks.